Five Nana Show with your host Zain Al-Amin. This is a show that focuses on Arab culture and politics, and it airs every Wednesday for 1 hour at WPFWFM.org and WBAIFM.
Come into Congress and you're letting Elise Stefanik dictate to you how to run a school? You're a scholar. That woman don't know how to run no school. You're supposed to be a scholar. Allow your scholarship and your humanity to lead that university and educate the rest of us in Congress. But I understand, because the other side, they've been bullying, they've been intimidating, they've been weaponizing anti-Semitism while rubbing elbows with actual anti-Semites and white supremacists who support the race replacement theory, like our Speaker Johnson. So I understand, because they've been weaponized. It's anti-Semitism now. It was DEI. No, it was critical race theory when I first got here. And then it was DEI. And then it was anti-trans. And now we're banning books. And in Texas, we're taking over school districts and turning libraries into places of incarceration for kids, detention centers. Are we in a police state or a democracy?
That was Jamal Bowman saying what nobody else in the Democratic Party, including the AOC, with the exception to people like Rashida Tlaib, who's speaking out. He is talking about the McCarthyite period we're going through, that we need to really confront head on before it goes too far, as McCarthyism did in the 50s. There is going to be a hearing tomorrow, and this is the McCarthyite Inquisition train. It's pulling up to Rutgers University now, but the hearing is going to be right here in Washington D.C. And it's going to center on faculty at Rutgers, people that we know, like Noura Erekat, who's been a spokesman for the Palestinian movement here at the grassroots level here in the United States, and specifically in the DMV area, and other known scholars, that they're going to put him in front of the most illiterate, backwards people you've ever met in Congress. These are people that are illiterate in every sense. They're illiterate when it comes to geography, history, the English language, and cultural languages at its lowest. And these are people that are Black, white, Latino. These are people that have been bought by AIPAC. Their souls have been sold to AIPAC. And also, they are MAGA supporters. And if you see the company they keep, the company that they keep, as Jamal Bowman just mentioned, the companies they keep is infested with white supremacist and anti-Semite, and ironically, they're going to be accusing faculty of being anti-Semitic. Which good luck with that, with some of the best fighters. This is not going to be a walk in the park for this McCarthyite commission, the oversight committee that's running this acquisition, because this time they're not going to be facing these Ivy League presidents who seem to forget what Intifada means, or the president of Colombia, who's an Arab, who refused to say that Intifada just means an uprising, just like the American uprising when they threw the British tea on the Boston Harbor. That's what an intifada is. And you're going to see the regular Neanderthals, these white supremacist boomers that are going to be forgetting that their senility or their dementia has reached such levels that they forgot that the United States actually has a separation of church and state, just like the one representative who asked one of the Ivy League presidents if she's doesn't she fear the wrath of God for not kicking out students out of the university for confronting genocide and opposing genocide. Today we're going to have a full show. I'm going to tell you about some of the things that are happening. That's what we'll start out with. One, we're going to have a student walkout here in DC that starts at McPherson Square this Friday at 11. If you're a student, I hope you can make it out there. If not, I hope that you can go out and support and be in the periphery and support these students, because usually they're accosted by white supremacists and Zionists, which are gathering together these days and yelling profanities and racist and sexist curses at the students as they march. Hopefully that won't happen there. The other thing that's happening is tomorrow night at Busboys and Poets in Tacoma Park, there will be a showing of the Occupation of the American Mind. And that's really important because what's happening is there's an organization that's under the cover of being a Jewish civil rights organization, which is actually a Zionist reactionary organization that's present in the DMV area, present in California, and has infested many schools around the country. And they're trying to change the curriculum. They're trying to stifle free speech and specific free speech, anything against the Zionist entity, anything that's pro-Palestinian. One of the things that they managed to do is keep the showing of this movie out of schools, even though it's a well-made documentary, and all the facts there are robustly substantiated. So the students and other organizers have decided to show it at Busboys and Poets at Tacoma Park tomorrow at 6 p.m. So if you want to watch an amazing documentary about how the American mind is really being manipulated by Zionists in the United States and members of both parties, you have to you should come up to the Busboys and Poets in Tacoma Park. And that's what's going on right now. That's what's going on this week. This is what we do here at the show. We do it every week. We had a short reprieve from the show. I had one, but when Gaza was attacked and when the genocide started, I came back to the show, and I've been telling you about events that are happening, giving you some analysis, and also giving you something you're not going to get anywhere, because we hear about the cataloging of the horrors that are happening in Gaza, but we don't hear about the resistance, the Palestinian and the Lebanese resistance that has, and the Yemeni resistance and the Iraqi resistance. There's basically Israel is fighting on six fronts right now, and losing on all fronts, by the way, losing on all fronts, I guarantee you. And you'll see by the end of the show, we'll be sharing a clip, as we do by the Electronic Intifada, about this loss and why is Israel facing defeat everywhere. But for now, I just wanted to tell you that we are in fund drive period, and we are we hope that you will help sustain the show, sustain this kind of news that you're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to get on. We're a real public radio station. We don't take money from like other public, other famous that shall remain unnamed, famous public radio stations that take money from the military industrial complex or anything. Your donations go straight to the station, and it keeps the lights on, it keeps everything going, it keeps the station going, it keeps the engineers going. And we volunteer our time. I volunteer my time to do this because this station is essential. It's my last bullhorn. And it's not and it's one of the places that is not being attacked. And I understand Sataria is here to help me pitch. Hi,
Hi.
Sataria.
Well, hi, Zane. How are you?
Good, how are you doing?
I am doing well. I feel great to be here on WPFW with you. So, good afternoon to you. I want to say thank you. As you mentioned, you are a volunteer, as are all of our programmers here at WPFW. So, thank you so much for the time you put in each and every week. Not only, you know, I know it takes a lot more than the hour that you have your show to truly produce the wonderful program with all the great information that you provide us each week. And I appreciate it, and I know your listeners appreciate it as well. So if you are out there listening and you know and appreciate the show each and every week, if you love, appreciate all the information that WPFW brings you, give us a call. Make your donation at 202-588-9739. You can also visit our website at wpfwfm.org. We'd like to have four new members this hour. Now, we know that, you know, you've been listening for years, and you know, you pick up the phone, something happens in your life, and you put it back down. This is your opportunity. This is your chance. If Zane has ever made you sit in your car because you had to hear the end of an interview, if you have ever sat in your car listening to WPFW, couldn't get out till you finished hearing a song or heard who it was performing, if you've ever had that experience at WPFW, give us a call. Show us how much you appreciate it. Show us how much you love the programming here by making your donation at 202-588-9739. Our goal this hour is $600. We know we can make that. All we need is six people to donate $100 each. What you think about that, Zane?
Yep, doable, very doable. And especially in this moment, in this historic moment where there's a live ongoing genocide, and you have to depend on shows like this to tell you what's happening, what's on the dark side of the moon when it comes to mainstream media, what they're not telling you, it's more essential than ever. If you want to sustain this kind of program, if you want to tell me, hey, we're listening and we appreciate the time you put in and the time you volunteer, and we care that when we think that your information is essential, and we think your information gives us the strength to also, because I know a lot of activists listen to this show, and this is a show that kind of steals your spine to do the work, that refreshes you with music, that strengthens you for the next day, for the next battle. So, if you really care about this show and this information, if you really are engaged in this moment or want to learn more so you can be engaged, as Sataria just mentioned, please call 202-588-9739. That's 202-588-9739 and make a pledge. You can also go online, because some of you, I know a lot of you, we even have not just national but international audience. You can go to wpfwfm.org. That's wpfwfm.org, and go to the donate button, go down to the Shayonana show, and make a donation there. And I don't know if the Cash App's still
We're
working.
not doing Cash App at this time, but we do
Okay.
invite people to, as you said, visit us, click donate now at wpfwfm.org, or give us a call at 202-588-9739.
Thank you, Sataria. And we'll be back. So again, the goal is 600. Hopefully we'll be, by the time I come back on for another pitch after this great clip from Al Jazeera Plus about this is the summation of the student protest, I'll come back and make another pitch. And hopefully we'll have some good news, some new members, perhaps.
Some people to thank.
Some people to thank, exactly. And with that, let's listen to the report. This is the summation of the student protests that you've been hearing about for the weeks. This is a great little compilation of what has happened so far and what needs to happen in this summer of Intifada. Let's listen.
What you're seeing right now, Chris.
So we're trapped in a dorm room. There's NYPD barricading the doors and we're not allowed to leave.
What started off as a protest against genocide at an elite Ivy League university was met with a military-style operation to suppress it.
We need to find a way to get students their medication.
So when Columbia University sent the NYPD onto campus, students were faced with some disturbing realizations.
They're willing to deploy violent, militarized police to maintain their active investment in genocide.
AJ Plus was the first to speak with pro-Palestinian students who were arrested inside a barricaded campus building after police raided it.
It sounded like we're being shot at.
We're reporting from the heart of the campus that sparked a global student movement for Palestine.
We are here on the streets because there's been 40,000 martyrs slaughtered by the Israeli war machine, which has been sustained and financed by many organizations here in New York City.
Including this very university, where students are challenging an elite system that helps maintain U.S. violence abroad and silences anyone who gets in their way.
It didn't even allow a medic to reach the student that they had shoved down the stairs.
One of Columbia's major legacies is that students have been willing to act when no one else will. So after months of protesting Israel's massacre on Palestinians, students raised the stakes, pitched tents, and occupied a lawn on campus.
Low-key fire.
It was meant to be a disruption of the status quo, but even during protest, there were moments that felt kind of normal. Then came an announcement.
Earlier today, President Shafiq sent out an email announcing the end of negotiations and declared explicitly that the university will not divest from Israel. We will not be moved unless by force.
Students say some of Columbia's $14 billion investment fund is funneled into companies that enable and profit from Israel's state violence. They want their university to cut those financial ties with Israel and boycott Israeli schools for upholding the apartheid system. Columbia students understand the power of protest. They occupied campus buildings in the 1960s to protest the U.S. war in Vietnam. And in 1985, the Ivy League divested from apartheid in South Africa after years of student demonstrations. That night, students repeated history, but as media, we weren't allowed onto campus to see it firsthand.
We're actually watching a live stream right now. This is the same building that students barricaded themselves inside in 1968 when they were protesting the Vietnam War. Protesters have raised a sign renaming Hamilton Hall Hins Hall
after a six-year-old Palestinian girl who was killed by the Israeli army.
This marks an escalation in the movement to force Colombia to divest from Israel.
The next day, when more police barricades showed up, so did supporters like Sherry and Hadia.
We're here to support the people of Columbia, the students of Columbia that are risking everything, and we know that they're risking everything, to stand and give Palestinians a voice and say, hey, not with our school dollars do we want to fund a genocide.
Two Palestinian moms from Chicago could understand the meaning of this movement, but the university, it seems, couldn't. the campus was on total lockdown.
Essential personnel only. No access. Stand over here
for me. What the f***? I'm paying you. Huge amount of fees to stay here.
Many students were denied access, including lead negotiator for the encampment, Mahmoud Khalil. The school promised him protection from retaliation, but that morning he found out he was suspended. How do you think the university has been handling negotiations prior to this point?
It was clear that the university was not acting in good faith. They refused to acknowledge that this is a huge movement that goes beyond those students on the camp, that goes up across the country.
What Columbia's done, other schools have followed. And as new encampments spread across the world, so did the counter-protests and harassment. And just outside campus, someone was filmed tearing down a Palestinian flag.
It's good to see it back up, flying strong.
Jewish student Jared says there's been so much misinformation about why students have been protesting.
I'm very proud of all my fellow Jewish students for standing up for what's right, even if they're told by a lot of institutions that this movement is inherently against them. It is not. It's against occupation, it's against apartheid, it's against genocide.
Israel rules over Palestinians through an apartheid system. In Gaza, it's been a 17-year siege. That means Israel decides when millions of people get access to food, water, electricity, and more.
Hey, Mohsen, how's it going? Thanks.
Palestinian student Mohsen Mahdawi is a third-generation refugee from the occupied West Bank.
The president just sent an email. Students occupying the building face expulsion. They have made their mind, and their mind is collective punishment. And now they're besieging the students who are protesting and the students who are on campus. That means supplies may not get into campus, and they are creating a valve where people leave one way and they cannot come back into campus. This is a strategy that is used by the oppressor, and Columbia University is not realizing that they are doing the same thing.
After the interview, we learned that despite an earlier announcement saying no press would be allowed on campus, a select few media outlets were getting in.
So our producer Asiya right now is trying to reach the communications department at Columbia.
Your call has been forwarded to the voicemail for.
ABC are on the list, CNN is on the list, NY1 is on the list, Associated Press is on the list, Getty is on the list, New York Times is on the list. Al Jazeera is not on the list.
The university gave students until 2 p.m. to abandon the encampments, but they never left. Neither did the crowds of people who gathered to shout support through the gates to them.
We just get an alert from the university. Shelter in a place for your safety due to heightened activity on the Morningside campus.
As Mohsen left, leaflets started falling from the sky.
In Gaza, it's usually the Israeli army that's dropping leaflets from the sky, warning of danger. But tonight, it's pamphlets for Hind Rajab, the 6-year-old Palestinian girl who was killed by the Israeli army.
Do so voluntarily. No charges will be placed against you.
Within minutes, hundreds of police officers flooded the streets, but it wasn't clear what the actual threat was and who they were supposed to be protecting.
Go inside your house, go. So go, not too late.
Three cops on every door.
An occupation which resulted in some minor property damage was met with the full force of the New York City Police Department. Body cam footage released by the NYPD shows how police entered the building and some of what happened inside. During the operation, the NYPD prevented access to most journalists and tried to turn away legal observers and medics.
Columbia University says that their concerns are student safety, but does this look like student safety right now?
Free Palestine, free Gaza!
Free Palestine!
Just behind me, you can see that they have dozens of people who they've arrested.
In the end, over 100 people were arrested around campus. 48 of them were inside Hamilton Hall during the operation. As the night wrapped up, we ran into Mohammed Al-Kurd, a Palestinian whose story gained international attention when settlers took over his home in occupied East Jerusalem.
Mohammed, tonight's been a really tough night. Police have come out in full force arresting dozens of students. By all accounts, it could seem like this liberation movement, at least on this campus, has ended. What's your response to that?
This kind of repression is, albeit ugly, is part of any natural movement, and it comes and goes, and it comes in ebbs and flows. The more there's resistance to colonial violence, the more there's resistance to imperial violence, the more brutal that violence is going to get. And I don't mean to sound insensitive in any way, shape, or form. You know, my heart goes out, and I'm here for a reason. And my heart goes out to all the students who have been arrested. But I think they understand as well as I do that no matter the amount of violence that they've gone through tonight, it does not compare. It does not compare to white phosphorus. It does not compare to aerial bombardment. And they understand this, and this is why they're out in the streets today.
The next day, the encampment was gone, but the spirit of student-led movements to end war and topple apartheid continued.
We're headed to downtown Manhattan right now to be with Erica. She's a law student who's trying to help people who were arrested last night.
What do you think the media is getting wrong about what happened last night?
The vast majority of the people that took over Hamilton Hall were students that are at the university currently. There's no reports that any of them did anything violent, unless you consider it violent to like just sit in a building.
What are the lessons from last night?
These elite institutions, they produce people that are upholding oppressive systems, whether it be capitalism, racism, etc. And so I think that, to me, this is sort of the like mask off of like what the university actually is in this day and age. And it's a money-making scheme. I mean, these schools are over $75,000 a year that people are paying. It's like, how much free speech, you know, did we ever really think we were going to get at these schools? And I think it's sort of just, it's been like a very sad revelation as a student, because the universities also do simultaneously have so much potential and so many young people that are there that are trying to sort of push back against the way that things have always been done.
After we spoke to Erica, two students who were inside Hind Hall when police raided it were released and said they'd speak to us on the condition we don't show their faces.
What was it like to experience that firsthand?
Yeah, I think the most unsettling part was we saw them using the saws to like cut through, and you could see like the sparks and everything. And then all of a sudden you hear like it sounded like we're being shot at. And we didn't know until like later that they were like flash grenades. But like in the moment, everyone thought that we were literally getting shot at. Yeah, and people
backed down.
Like, we were like barricaded up, but then once we heard that, we literally like everything just like crumbled a little bit. We were just like ducked down because it's like they weren't even inside, so they didn't have a clear shot of what was happening. We could have been standing right there and we could have gotten hit by that.
One officer did in fact fire their gun, but no one was injured.
Yeah, when they came in, they threw one of our comrades onto the stairs, and they came in like didn't even look like humans. Like one of them was holding the saw, it looked like some kind of extension of his body. Like they looked like robots. And there was just so many of them, and they were so heavily armed, and none of us were, obviously. Like, and so like some of those people in there with us were like 19 years old. Like, children.
Our interview was cut short when one of their friends was released from custody and they ran to give them hugs. It was after midnight and students from Columbia were still there, showing up for one another. For students like Romy, it was a surreal experience.
Sitting at like fucking New York court at 1 a.m. Wow, your classmates, like literally someone that I do a group project with, is still in there for the second night, sitting with like the rats and the one. Oh, wait. Oh my God. I was talking about you. No way. I'm sure that divestment will happen. Might not be you know, this semester, it might not be next semester, but it will. And I think that's what so many of us believe, and I think that's why we keep coming and trying to raise awareness.
That was a clip from AJ Plus, from Al Jazeera Plus, summing up what has happened in the historical encampments that are strewn across the nation and across the world. There were hundreds of encampments that were established. There was at least 75 encampments established elsewhere in Europe and other places, and in some Scandinavian countries, of course, and even there was attempts in Berlin, which has been the most rabid. You know, the Germans are never learned from their mistakes. They've been attacking Jewish pro-Palestinian protesters and calling them anti-Semitic without knowing that they're actually Jews. And they're, of course, suppressing speech like no other. This is the kind of news that you're going to get here on the Shai Onana show. This is your host, Zain Al-Amin, and we're doing a fundraising drive right now. We're in the middle of it, and we have a very modest goal of $600 to meet for this show, for this hour. And we are going to be talking, as usual, about what's happening. And always in the second part of the show, I try to include something about the actual resistance that's happening on the ground, not just the student resistance happening here, which is very important, which is essential, which has the Palestinians have acknowledged as critical, which Palestinian youth have mentioned over and over again, that they are grateful for the students for fighting for divestment in their schools, for fighting for a ceasefire, that these Palestinian youth are having hope for the first time because they're seeing American students rise in the thousands and the hundreds of thousands across the nation to stop this genocide. And we have the most callous president, the most callous, you know, with Trump, it's not callousness. With Trump, it's he's a madman, basically. But with Biden, it's called callousness because he knows what's happening. He just doesn't care because he's a racist. He doesn't really care about Palestinian or Arab lives. And I have a theory that he has no problem losing the election. His most recent try is saying, oh, the youth are upset at me. Hey, Kamala, come on over. Let's talk about hiring somebody that produces good memes. He thinks good memes are going to convince students and the American youth to vote for him, to say, okay, genocide is okay, and we're going to vote for him. This is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a president who has dementia, and the alternative in November is going to be between a madman and a demented one. And that's not acceptable. Neither are acceptable. And this McCarthyite inquisition that's happening needs to stop, needs to be shut down in its tracks. Tomorrow's hearing, you should show up at 9 for tomorrow's hearing, which is going to be starting at 10:30 or 11. People should show up early to get into the hearing, which is going to be if you look up the Oversight Committee on Education, it's going to be happening tomorrow. You'll get the location and all the information where they're going to be trying to pull off another one of those McCarthy-like inquisitions run by, as I mentioned earlier, a group of people that are bought by AIPAC, that are MAGA supporters. And by the way, the Democratic Party is doing nothing about this, about stopping this. They're sitting on the sidelines and witnessing, because that's what they do. They witness. They don't do diddly. If you care about this information, about these actions, a lot of you that listen to the show depend on the show to tell them what activities are happening. I'm constantly approached on the street during demonstrations asking, what news should you follow? Well, this is one of the shows you should follow along with. You should always start your day with Democracy Now. You should listen to the Shyam Nana show every Wednesday from 2 to 3 so that we can tell you where to go in the DMV area, where's the action happening, what is the strategy being planned, where's the attack coming from on our civil rights, on our free speech, where is fascism setting in and where we need to resist it. If you care about this kind of news, if you care about this kind of information, please call 202-588-9739 and make a pledge right now. Again, the number is 202-588-9739. You can also go to wpfwfm.org, because I know some of you listen online. That is wpfwfm.org, and make a pledge. And no matter where you are in the nation, you're able to listen through this link. So, you know, donations aren't only accepted from the DMV area, but from across the nation, across the world.
And we also have someone to thank, Zane.
Oh, excellent.
We have Lynn.
So, this is Sataria, by the way. Thank you, Sataria, for helping me pitch today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. We want to thank Lynn in Silver Spring, Maryland, who was very generous. We still have a little ways to go to meet our goal this hour. We know that the listeners out there can help us make it. Again, you can become a sustainer for as little as $10 per month. That counts as $120 for the year. And five people will get us over goal. We really appreciate you out there. We want you to join the WPFW family. If you haven't given in a long time, we invite you back. And if you love and value this program, if you love and value this information, if you love and value our right to say it, our right to offer different information and opinions than what you receive in mainstream media, please give us a call and make your donation at 202-588-9739 or click donate now at WPFWFM.org.
Thank you, Sataria. With that, we're going to go back to our program, and I will be coming back for one last pitch in the last few minutes of the show. So I hope between now and then we'll have more people to thank for their donations. And to sustain the show is one of the best ways to do it. You could just be a sustainer, as Sataria mentioned, by donating $120. And we would just need five of those sustainers to sign up to meet our goal for this hour. And that way you can sustain us for a whole year. Just make the donation and not worry about it for the whole year. And so we'll go back to the show now. And the last clip that I wanted to share with you is some information that I've been sharing from the Electronic Intifada, which has been providing information that we're not hearing about, namely about what's happening in terms of the actual resistance on the ground, because there is no hope coming from Biden. There is no hope from the international community. There is some hope coming from the ICJ, thanks to South Africa. There is some hope there. The ICC ruling recently, there is some hope in the sense that at least they put out an arrest warrant for Netanyahu and with one other senior government official. They should have included all the lunatics that are leading this genocide, but we'll take that. So there is some hope coming internationally, but there is also hope. Palestinians listen to this news that you're about to listen to because they care about what is actually physically preventing and slowing down this genocide, as Palestinians have promised that this is entering Rafah is not going to be a walk in the park like they did before in all of the areas of Gaza, which, by the way, are now being again the resistance is popping up in all of the areas that Israel has claimed to have neutralized, so to speak, in northern Gaza, in central Gaza, and now in Rafah they're meeting a kind of resistance that you'll only hear about on this station, on this program. So let's listen to the Electronic Intifada report titled "Israel in a Bind, Facing Defeat Everywhere."
But yeah, let's talk about the Nasrallah speech that was 2 nights ago. You know, like when Nasrallah speaks, the entire Arab world stops and listens. What was I watched a little bit of it. I didn't watch the whole thing, I admit, but maybe Ali, if you can talk a little bit about what he said in general, and then we can discuss.
Yes, it was one of these speeches, and I'm sorry, I have a bit of a sore throat, so my voice sounds a little rough. But it was one of these speeches that he gave on, you know, typically his speeches are on occasions commemorating, you know, the martyrdom of a commander or a respected member of the resistance. And this was one such a case, occasion. It was the martyrdom, the seventh anniversary of the martyrdom of a man called Mustafa Badreddin. But these occasions are used to make sort of broad speeches, give analysis. And this was, in some respects, similar to what we've heard before from Nasrallah, where he lays out sort of a broad regional vision, sort of weighs the balance of forces in the region. He was very confident. He sounded very self-assured. And I think some of the key takeaways is that he talked about how Israel and the United States are really in a strategic bind. I mean, one thing I'll say, a point he makes time and again, is that the United States is the one that calls the shots. It's not Israel. And I think that I agree with that. We've seen that in terms of this kind of this dance that the Biden administration is playing, where they try to make it appear as if they're reigning in Israel when they're not actually doing so. But aside from that, what Nasrallah says is that, you know, Israel is really in a bind because it has two choices. One is to accede to the demands of the resistance in order to get a ceasefire. And those demands are well known. They include, of course, an end to the war, allowing people to return home, Israeli withdrawal from Gaza, unfettered flow of aid and reconstruction, and of course an exchange of prisoners. So that's one way, but that constitutes defeat for Israel, and that's unacceptable to Israel. On the other side, Israel has the choice to continue the war, a war of attrition which it is clearly losing. And I think we could, you know, just see from the presentation that John has just given us how severe that defeat is militarily. And just think about how little of that you see in the mainstream media. You never see the videos or the reports of the resistance that we just saw from John in the New York Times, on CNN, on the BBC. So people are unaware of the extent to which Israel is losing the war on the ground. And I say that to emphasize that Nasrallah's analysis is fact-based. It's grounded in the reality. And that's, of course, not just in Gaza, which he called the main front, but he also talked about Lebanon, which we've seen, where they have been gradually escalating the tactics and escalating the type of weapons they're using. And he also made reference to the fronts with the Iraqi resistance and Yemen. And so, again, that reminds us that the resistance looks at this as not a single battle, a single decisive battle which is going to defeat Israel, but a war over a period of time which Israel is losing, and the resistance feels confident that it's winning. So that's really what I took away from it. But I know there were other points that others might want to emphasize from the speech.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the October 6th versus October 7th reality, just he talked about how October 6th, there was no Palestinian state. They were ghettoized and ignored. And October 7th, because of heroic indigenous resistance that was built under blockade, and the resistance since then has completely has Israel in upheaval. It has them being, their military generals are being mocked. They don't believe that the people in their society don't believe that the army can take care of them anymore. The students are out. He talked about the student protesters. The students are out in the streets inspired by the resistance and the courageous resistance of the fighters, but also of the people of Gaza who have been enduring through this, and everybody watches it and are inspired by, what can we do? Like, people ask themselves, what can we do? Because you watch what people in Gaza are doing, and that has inspired people. Whereas the juxtaposition is the Israelis are just seen as, child killers who mock the international community. Nasrallah noted a couple times of UN speeches where the UN, Israeli UN ambassador held up that card and said, the ceasefire address is Yahya Sinwar, and he held up the card for Sinwar. And Nasrallah was like, just watch that scene and tell me who's winning and who's losing the war. I think it's the same ambassador ripped up the UN charter and just...
No, he had a tiny little baby paper shredder.
I thought when I saw the tiny little, it was Gilad Erdan.
Yeah.
When I saw the tiny little paper shredder, I thought, that phrase comes into your head, the world's tiniest violin.
Yeah.
The world's tiniest paper shredder.
He mocked it. And everybody mocked it. The world mocked it, right? Yeah. So Israel's shown itself to be this strategic... He pointed out, they're losing the war. So they're a strategic liability to the United States. The United States, the UK, all these countries have to come save them all the time. They have to air bridge all the weapons to them. They have to actually literally knock Iranian missiles out of the sky for them. And they're just a brutal state that insults the world, kills children, and their own people don't feel confident that their settler project can last. And he did that with the sort of classic Nasrallah Israeli media summary, right? He does the Israeli media roundup. And he says, just listen to what they say. Well, he says two things. Look at the battlefield results, but also look at what the enemy says. Look at what the defense minister says. Look at how they mock Netanyahu for saying that they just need Rafah for the complete victory. If we don't have Rafah, there's no complete victory. He's being mocked for that. They want the chief of staff Halevi to resign. There's protests in the streets constantly.
Well, I want to come back to that, but I just want to say more about the speech and then sort of pick up on something Nasrallah said and bring it up to date in a sense. But he also talked about the impotence of the Arab regimes. He was talking about Lebanon in particular and the issue of Syrian refugees, where internally in Lebanon there's calls for the many Syrian refugees to go back home. And he says, you know, they should be able to go back home, but they should be able to go back home safely. And what that means is that the Lebanese government should demand that the U.S. sanctions that prevent Syria from rebuilding, the so-called Caesar sanctions, should be lifted. And the way to pressure the West is to say, you know, okay, so if you don't want them to go back home to Syria where they can actually live not under these brutal sanctions, then we're going to open the shores of Lebanon and let them sail to Europe. And he said they would immediately change their policy. But when you're a government that waits for a phone call from this or that Western embassy to tell you what to do, and you have no sovereignty, then you can't take decisions. You're not really the master of your own fate. And so that's a point that applies more broadly, because he's contrasting the sovereignty, in a sense, of the resistance axis, the fact that they are taking the decisive decisions about the future, about the destiny of their people and the region, as opposed to the Arab dictatorships that are lining up to help the United States and Israel shoot down missiles that are aimed at Israeli military bases, which is just absolutely extraordinary. But the point I wanted to pick up on, when Nasrallah talked about, you know, the disarray within Israel, the defeatism, the confusion, look at what's happening just in the last few hours, where Netanyahu, the prime minister, and Yoav Gallant, the defense minister, are in an open public battle over the future of Gaza. I mean, and again, they're assuming that they were going to be able to dictate the future of Gaza, which clearly they're not. But Gallant is saying, we have to be very clear and say publicly that we will not install a military government in Gaza, that's to say an Israeli military government in Gaza, for the long term. And Netanyahu is saying, I'm not going to allow the Palestinian Authority back to Gaza, and I'm not going to allow Hamas to rule Gaza. But Gallant, presumably as the defense minister, is the one who is receiving the reports from the ground directly, and is therefore making the assessment that there's no way we can hold Gaza. There's no way we can govern Gaza. They can't even hold Jabalia and Zeytun 6-7 months after they claimed they had cleared the resistance out of them. And so there is just this complete unraveling within Israel that, you know, is mirrored by the complete, I think, confusion in the United States, where on the one hand, the Biden administration keeps saying they don't want Israel to attack Rafah, or they want humanitarian aid to go in. But at the same time, today, the Washington Post reported that despite saying that they're delaying sending the 2,000-pound bombs, which presumably Israel already has big stockpiles of anyway, they're going ahead to send $1 billion worth of tank ammunition, tactical vehicles. That's interesting, isn't it? Because that's a sign that a lot of their vehicles have been destroyed in Gaza.
So we've been listening to this clip that from Electronic Intifada about what's happening on the ground in terms of Palestinian resistance. And this is the kind of information you're not going to get anywhere, because you're just hearing about the cataloging of horrors, which is important, but also there is resistance. And your resistance can be in a form of sustaining this kind of program that reports the truth and reports about the kind of opposition to the McCarthyite drive that's happening here nationally and against the genocide that's happening to the Palestinian people. So the one way to make a donation is to call 202-588-9739 in these last few minutes, 202-588-9739, or you can go online to wpfwfm.org and make a donation. Go to the donate button and make a donation there. Again, it's wpfwfm.org, and go to the donate button, make a donation.
Yes, and again, we want to thank Lynn of Silver Spring and Patricia Laird of Crofton, Maryland. Thank you both for donating to Shewanana as well as WPFW. We have $480 to go. Perhaps someone out there can donate the full amount. If you cannot, we still invite you to continue to donate. 202-588-9739. Donate now at WPFWFM.org.
For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns with some brief news headlines. Funeral processions were held in Iran today for the country's president, foreign minister, and other officials killed in a helicopter crash earlier this week. Hundreds of thousands of people joined a procession in the capital, Tehran, and officials prayed over the coffins of the dead. The late President Ibrahim Raisi had been considered a possible successor to Iran's supreme leader, 85-year-old Ali Khamenei, who recited a prayer for the dead at the services today. Following the deadly crash, Iran set June 28th as the next presidential election. No clear favorite has yet emerged for that job. The election comes as tensions with Israel and the United States have escalated over the war in Gaza. Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh attended the services in Tehran today, a signal that Iran is likely to continue supporting militant groups in the region. Holding a press conference in the rain today, UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak announced July 4th as a national election day that will likely see his Conservative Party ousted from power after 14 years. Conservatives have seen their public support weaken in recent years amid ethics scandals and poor economic performance, a situation the centre-left Labour Party is hoping will catapult them back into the majority in Parliament. Sunak made his announcement today after the release of economic data showing inflation in Britain falling to 2.3%, its lowest level in almost 3 years. But the optimistic data point is unlikely to sway enough voters back to the Conservative Party. Labour Party leader Keir Starmer announced a platform last week focused on economic stability and border security. Three European countries said today that they would recognize a Palestinian state. The nearly simultaneous decisions by Spain, Ireland, and Norway put pressure on other EU nations and the United Nations to advance the process to make Palestine an internationally recognized state. Here's Simon Harris, Prime Minister of Ireland.
Today, Ireland, Norway, and Spain are announcing that we recognize the state of Palestine. Each of us will now undertake whatever national steps are necessary to give effect to that decision.
Israel today recalled its ambassadors to Spain, Ireland, and Norway in retaliation. About 140 UN member countries already recognize Palestine, including a total 7 EU states. Earlier this month, the UN General Assembly voted overwhelmingly to grant new rights to Palestinian representatives, though it stopped short of offering voting rights in the assembly. Just yesterday, three other European countries, France, Belgium, and Slovenia, said they support a request for arrest warrants against Hamas and Israeli leaders, including Prime Minister Netanyahu. The Israeli government will return a camera and broadcasting equipment it seized from the Associated Press yesterday. The decision came just hours after Israel shut down AP's live video of northern Gaza and followed criticism from the Biden administration and international journalists and rights groups. Israel argued that the AP feed was used to provide images to Al Jazeera, which has been banned in Israel following the passage of a new foreign broadcast law. Press advocates have warned that the law creates a dangerous precedent for censoring independent news outlets in the region amid the ongoing war in Gaza. The AP's live feed of Gaza was back up early today. And none of the food and supplies that have entered the Gaza Strip through a U.S.-built pier have been distributed to Palestinians, a Pentagon spokesman said at a news briefing yesterday. Several desperate Gazans intercepted trucks delivering aid from the pier on Saturday, leading the UN to suspend delivery operations until logistical challenges are resolved. The temporary pier is one of few remaining entry points for aid shipments since Israel began an incursion into the southern Gazan city of Rafah earlier this month. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 84 degrees and mostly cloudy. In New York City, 82 degrees with fair skies. for WPFW in Washington and WBAI.